The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, Euro edition. Today, France, what happened at Le Classique? Germany, how Bayern failed to move Alonso and then suffered a historic defeat. Liga, Rodrigo stars in Real against Athletic. And Serie A, as Lazio do Juve and prepare to do them again. Is this the worst week for the old lady at the hands of a Tudor since Anne Boleyn? All those questions and more in this Totally Football Show. Totally Football Show on the 2nd of April 2024. Who's turned up today, listener? Well, you have for a start. Hello to you. Also here, talking to you very shortly, some Alvaro Romeo.
Hola, James.
Hola, Alvaro. James Allcastle in the house.
Hello, James.
Woof. Jules.
Hello, boys.
Hello, Jules. Julien Laurence, of course. You're in a kind of... Is it a... I wouldn't call it. It's more like a kind of timber, nuclear, end-of-the-world fallout shelter thing.
What does he know that we don't know?
Yeah.
Jules' exactly. Moment of the week is the...
end of the world. lots of tin cans just out of shot. Jules, where are you? Is it an Easter break?
Yeah, I'm in So Farmhouse, for the people who know So Farmhouse. It's a lovely... kind of hotel with little rooms like the one I'm in and right. Some bigger rooms, some smaller rooms. Jacuzzi, like where you went, Jimbo, I believe.
No.
Okay, sorry. That was not the same place then. Yeah. James Horncastle and Raphael Hornish are also very familiar with the so houses okay. Around the world.
Yeah. The jacuzzis.
And the broadband is excellent as well.
Is the broadband good?
Yeah.
For right. The price you pay, Alvaro, it has to be.
Lovely to see you got away for a bit, Jules. Hardworking chap as you are. Also away on an Easter break at the moment is Raphael Honigstein. But we will be hearing from him shortly because, of course, it's been a big week for German football news. However, moment of the week, let's start with James Horncastle.
So I'm going to go with Saturday night, James, Juventus against Lazio. Juventus have had, 2 weeks to, I suppose, turn around their season, which was a title race back in February. And now it's relegation form. 7 points in their last 9 games. Allegri tried a new system, 4-3-3. It didn't work.
Gendouzi, area di rigore. Gendouzi la mette in mezzo. Colpo di testa, rete! Rete! Ha segnato la Lazio all'ultimo secondo. Ha segnato Marusic.
And they came undone against Lazio under the new management. Igor Tudor, I think, would have been perhaps a candidate to become the next Juventus manager in the summer. If the current administration at Juventus decides to make a change. But yeah, just to see Juventus so listless in relegation form. As you mentioned, James, they've got this cup semi-final coming up against Lazio. First leg is tonight. But also their fixtures in the league are terrifying. They play Fiorentina, they play Roma, they play Milan. So there is some jeopardy here as to whether Juventus drop out of not only the top four, but top five.
Wow. That's a big moment of the week. Alvaro, what have you got?
Well, my one is Girona winning. Ooh. Again. Just because they did it in a very nice manner. Again, beating Betis 3-2, another entertaining game. Basically, Girona has been very poor away, and then at home they are still powerful, and they've got two Ukrainian footballers, Chigankov and Dobbik, who are really keeping Girona up there. And... I highlight their win because I think that right now they are almost effectively qualified for the Champions League. Mm. They've got 9 more points than Athletic Club Bilbao, who are 5th. And worth thinking that also Girona's great season means that, individuals are hitting the headlines. And one of them is Artem Dobbik. He's 16 goals, as many as Jude Bellingham. And I think that there is a big chance that this season we have a Pichichi outside of Atletico, Real Madrid and Barcelona, which hasn't happened since 2008.
Ooh, who's currently leading the Pichichi standings?
It's Jude Bellingham, Artem Dobbik and Ante Budimir. Budimir plays for Osasuna and Artem Dobbik plays for Girona.
So your trivia here, is it Dani Guiza, Mallorca?
Wow.
Excellent.
See?
Excellent.
That's our horny
knowledge. Yeah. Pure, sheer knowledge.
There you go.
Look up knowledge in the dictionary. What do you see?
Yeah.
Hey, Jules, who just came in through your French window in your
Pick up your they pick up your bags. I mean, it's pouring. So right. they just pick up the bags because we're leaving today. But
are
they
you
pick
leaving?
Up your bags and they put it in your car. It's very nicely organized.
That's very nicely organized, isn't it? Was that your moment of the week or did something beat that?
My moment of the week was Sunday night in Marseille, but nothing to do with the game. We'll talk about the game and Kylian Mbappé and his attitude and all of that later. But it's because before the game, the Marseille Ultras had a beautiful tifo, if you watch the game, with the face of a big, big tifo, massive, with the face of Redouane Bougueraba, who you have never heard of, I would suspect, and probably not the listeners either.
My trivia knowledge suggests.
Yeah. Not Danny Guisa. Redouane Bougueraba is a comedian, very funny guy. He's from Marseille, who's a big celebrity now in France. One of the best comedians that we have currently. And he's a big Marseille fan. He was born there. He was a fan all his life. And the Ultras just wanted to kind of like pay tribute to him in a way. And also because he will have a gig at the Vélodrome Stadium soon, which nobody has ever done before in terms of a comedian.
Not even Jules.
So it was all fun. But the problem is the club came out after the game, after the defeat, very angry about it, saying, like, we didn't know this. This is outrageous. This is unacceptable. Which has created a controversy for no reason, really, because I think the club should have focused on their team that's lost three in a row now, that didn't play too bad against PSG, but still lost again one of the classics.
Right.
Instead of going after their fans, and especially one of their most famous fans who didn't ask for anything, and going after them like that, I thought they just got the wrong battle there.
So let me get this straight. Attack opposition buses with rocks and put the opposition manager in hospital needing stitches? No comment. Threaten your manager to the extent that he actually quits the job and flees to another country? No comment.
That's right.
Do a banner in favour of a local comedian celebrity? Wow, that's unacceptable.
Exactly. This is why it's my... And maybe you wanted to deflect, if you're Pablo Longoria, you wanted to deflect from the defeat, maybe. But don't do that. And now, obviously, as you can expect, the whole of Marseille is going like, what are you talking about? What are you doing? Why are you reacting like that to something that was really nice? And Redouane Bougueraba is a lovely guy. He's a great comedian. Okay, his only problem is he's from Marseille. But outside of that, it's great. So there was really no harm at all with the tifo.
All right. What's his funniest joke, Jules? Can you give us a joke from him?
Yeah, so what he does in his gigs is he interacts a lot with the audience. Mm-hmm. So he will talk to the audience and then take the mickey out of the people who are there, you know. So this is, it's really funny.
Nice. Let's get on to some football. And first up, it's Raphael Honigstein.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Im Mittelfeld beim BVB. Özcan am 16er. Flachpass in die Mitte zu Alea. Der müsste abschließen. Nee, passt rüber zurück. Oh, Tor! 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 Julian Ryazan mit dem 2-0.
Raf, guten Tag to you.
Guten Tag, James.
Let's begin, if we may, with the historic events at the Allianz Arena this weekend.
Yes, James, a first win for Dortmund since 2014. That one doesn't even count because Bayern had already won the league and Guardiola had fielded a second string 11 and they lost 3-0. I think that was just before Real Madrid semi-final. This one, some people might say, doesn't have that much riding on it either for Bayern. But of course, with the Arsenal game looming, it was a very poor result and even worse performance. And yet again, just when you thought Bayern with a bit of positive momentum going into the international break, decent wins against Lazio, against Darmstadt and Bochum, perhaps not the most challenging of opponents, but nevertheless, this was a significant step back again and a kind of lifeless, devoid of energy, devoid of any rhythm, kind of Bayern attacking game that we've seen too often. And it only needed a decent and committed Dortmund performance with solid defence and one or two counter-attacks to get a result that they haven't had in a decade.
Wow. 2-0, their victory. The big story, of course, that Harry Kane now behind Lewandowski in the race to break Lev's goal-scoring record. Dortmund now 3 points ahead of Leipzig in the race for top four. Leipzig only managed a 0-0 draw with Lully Mainz at the weekend. But you mentioned the lack of fire in Bayern's bellies. Tuchel afterwards saying that he felt the team lacked the necessary passion. Is that because, as you say, it didn't actually matter that much, that the championship title is gone and that they are now focused on the Arsenal game? Or do you think there's a real risk of carrying this form into that Champions League quarterfinal?
Well, it's hard to know whether that somehow subconsciously played a role and Bayern was just kind of saving themselves for when it really matters. But I think that wasn't the plan. I mean, they really spoke extensively before the game about the need to keep the same kind of intensity, the same kind of rhythm and confidence that had crept back into their game and keep it going now. And, you know, for the final third of the season, just to reach levels that we've seen all too rarely. But yet again, this was the Bayern team that did create one or two chances, and maybe on another day Harry Kane scores one, two, maybe three of them. I think he was a bit unlucky with the offside as well. And there are some suggestions that the German VAR drew the wrong line, having missed one defender, but I'm not sure we'll ever know. Either way, beyond that, Bayern didn't have much and looked so low on ideas. It often came down to somebody trying to do something 1v1 or finding Harry Kane with some half-assed cross, and that really isn't a kind of attacking performance that you think is going to do them any good against Arsenal. And defensively, Bayern weren't that great either. So a lot of people, I think, feel a lot less happy about Bayern's chances than they were before this game. It brought all the faults, all the problems of this team into stark relief once more.
Well, 13 points in the Bundesliga behind Bayer Leverkusen, who themselves were behind until late on in their game against Hoffenheim, but being Bayer Leverkusen, had one of their late comeback wins. Two late goals indeed, with Patrick Schick in time added on with another winner for them. They are now unbeaten in all competitions, 39 matches, incredible. And perhaps the best news of all, Rafa, their manager is going to be sticking around.
Yeah, I think those news slightly overshadowed the game in a strange way. The big win came already in midweek or just before the weekend, when Xabi Alonso confirmed what had sort of leaked a couple of days before that he would stay. I think still quite a few people surprised by that. Leverkusen are on course to win the double, maybe more. And you wonder, you know, how can he improve on that? But Xabi's always taken very little notice of what sort of the external view is, and probably feels that A, there's further to go with this Leverkusen team, and B, that he will benefit from another year in a very stable and functioning environment before going to slightly less stable and less functional environments, whether they be in Munich or elsewhere. So yeah, it's great for Leverkusen. I think it's great for the run-in for them. It takes away any sort of doubts or insecurity that might arise. And I think it's great for the league, because we're going to get another year with one of the hottest managerial prospects and a team that really responds to him. So winners all around, apart from perhaps in Munich and Liverpool. But even there, I think they had maybe come to terms in recent days and weeks that this was going to be a strong possibility. Alonso and later Kusen, as they're now being called in the German media, being together for a little bit longer.
So next season then, Raf, we've got various candidates with Xabi Alonso out of the picture to be taking over FC Bayern. Seb Hoeneß, who you've mentioned, Ralf Rangnick, who's Austria, who've been doing amazingly. They're going to be in Germany, of course, for the Euros this summer. But this last weekend, a 2-0 win over Slovakia, a 6-1 victory over Turkey. Who is the feeling in Munich is likely now to be taking over?
Well, it keeps changing. We're hearing different reports about different names being put forward, maybe suggesting that it's not quite a unanimous view at the Bayern board. It rarely is, in all fairness. But the names you mentioned are very much in the mix. I think there is a increasing possibility that Julian Nagelsmann might come back as well, which would be in one way a big surprise, and in another quite in keeping with Bayern tradition. They've always brought managers back. When I'm thinking of Udo Lattek, Ottmar Hitzfeld, Jupp Heynckes. So it's often worked out second time around. And there's a feeling that maybe with a bit more help from those above him and perhaps with a bit more maturity, it can work. But it's a very fluid situation, and I wouldn't advise anyone to take any bets at this point.
I see. All right. One other thing. You mentioned that Bayer Leverkusen are on for a double. They're going to be involved in the Pokal semi-final on Wednesday when they host Dusseldorf. Tonight, as we record, Tuesday, meanwhile, the big cup story, the big other underdog story of the season in Germany. Saarbrücken, 10th in the third division in Germany, who put out Bayern Munich, who then put out Eintracht Frankfurt, who then put out Borussia Mönchengladbach, are taking on their local rivals, Kaiserslautern. Can they make it to the cup final, Raf?
Well, can Kaiserslautern stop them? I mean, the way Saarbrücken have been going, they're the favourites. At least that's how Kaiserslautern manager Friedhelm Funkel views the thing. He just reiterated that when he said that a couple of weeks ago, he was not trying to jinx them. He was being deadly serious. And of course, we're going to have the factor of the pitch once more. The pitch has been Saarbrücken's not-so-secret weapon. It drains very badly. It's again been raining quite a lot. And Kaiserslautern, I'd be wrong to say they're afraid, because they have their own mythology about bad weather, going back to their player Fritz Walter, who, as it was said, always enjoyed playing on that kind of weather. That's how West Germany, and a bit of help from other things, won the World Cup in 1954. But Saarbrücken, I think, play it better than anyone else. And I'd be almost surprised if Saarbrücken don't make it now.
Wow. All right. Well, they could be up against man of the moment, Xavi, in that final. It all depends what happens over the next two nights. Rafa, enjoy your break. We shall see you next week, I hope.
Thank you, James.
Raphael Honigstein. What a situation there as Bayern chase a new manager. And be crazy to see Ralf Rangnick back. If only we could get his manager on the phone, see what he thinks about it. Who's your money on, Jules?
Oh, Nagelsmann will go back to Bayern. It's easy. They're paying him. So it's like it's the garden leave that you see in Italy all the time, where you can bring them back and it doesn't actually cost too much. This is what's going to happen, especially if he has a good Euros. And the way he's turning around the national team at the moment, yeah. We saw that last week against France and the Netherlands, then it might not actually be a bad idea.
Now, I think I've said this before, I would love them to go for Antonio Conte. I'd like the disciple of Trapp to go to Sebenstrasse.
Nice.
There you go.
I mean, Didi Amann wants Mourinho, so maybe Mourinho could be the answer.
I would love Mourinho to be there just so to watch Raf have to cope with that. That would be the best.
It would be delicious. We shall see what they decide soon, I guess. Next up, anyway, let's move on to Ligue 1, Jules.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Listener, we were just hearing about Bayer Leverkusen extending their unbeaten run to 39 games now. But meanwhile, elsewhere in Europe, one of the great unbeaten runs in the domestic league certainly came to an end this weekend when PSV finally lost a match. It was away to Neck 3-1. They went down on Saturday, cutting their lead at the top to a mere 7 points from Feyenoord. The Eredivisie goes again today as we record this on Tuesday. Another full round of matches. PSV are away at Excelsior. What if they lose that and Feyenoord win on Thursday against Volendam? What if? We'll have more on that next week, perhaps. For now, Jules. All right, Le Classique, you touched on it already, the beforehand and the aftermath. But what about the game itself? A 2-0 victory for PSG with the Portuguese players coming to the fore. Hakimi s'est bien fait maintenant avec Asensio. Gonçalo Ramos tout seul au deuxième poteau. Gonçalo Ramos contrôle. Gonçalo Ramos qui va ajuster Lopez. Et le but. Et le but. Et le 2-0 pour le Paris Saint-Germain.
It was a really good game, I thought, overall, because Marseille played well. They had chances. Gigi Donnarumma was outstanding again in goal, to the point that people in Paris are saying like he's the best goalkeeper in Europe right now. He made 10 saves. I mean, not all of them were spectacular, but there's a couple where really, really good. And PSG at time struggled a little bit in the first half under like the pouring rain. Like I've never seen so much rain in Marseille in a very long time. Under the pouring rain and with 10 men as well, because Lucas Beraldo, the young Brazilian centre-back who arrived in January, was sent off in a really strange way because it looked really, I mean, I don't even think it's a foul from him on Aubameyang on the halfway line by the touchline. And then the referee just gave a foul to Marseille. Beraldo was already on a yellow, but doesn't give a second yellow, nothing. The free kick is about to be taken and the game to be starting again when the VAR caused the referee to come to the monitor to tell him, look, he was the last defender, Beraldo, so this should be a red card. When actually Danilo Pereira is in the center circle, so he could have caught Aubameyang, I think. And Aubameyang, again, was 45 meters away from the goal, from Donnarumma's goal, and the referee sends Beraldo off. So he went from a simple foul to a straight red. And the foul, that was like really, there was no, I think it was crazy. There was a goal disallowed from Marseille that I don't think should have been disallowed again as well. So there was a few things again with referee, like in many countries this weekend again. But overall, PSG, especially in the second half, even with 10 men, were really good. They moved the ball well. Dembele played again as a false nine, like against Real Sociedad in San Sebastian in the Champions League, and did really well. So really, from a PSG point of view, the only bad thing of the night was the Kylian Mbappe situation.
Okay, tell us about the Kylian Mbappe situation. Although I would like to ask you as well about how worried you might be about PSG's defending if Donnarumma has to make 10 saves with Barcelona coming up in the Champions League.
Yeah, it was a little bit kind of roaring at times to see how easy it was for Marseille, who were very aggressive, like always in Classic, especially at the Velodrome. It was a record crowd. So Marseille would be up for it, obviously. And it was a bit worrying at times to see how easy it was for them to get in good shooting position, for example, for Donnarumma to have to make the save. So I think Marquinhos will be back for the Barcelona game. Nuno Mendes as well. Lucas Hernandez and Beraldo will fight off for the second starting position in that partnership in centre-backs. And then Hakimi, who's not hasn't been great since AFCON, to be fair, will be, I think, the right-back. So they will have to solidify that midfield, especially, and protecting better the back four. But then, obviously, all people are talking about is Mbappe. He came off after 64 minutes. In a classic, which obviously has never been seen before. There was 1 year, remember, where he was dropped to the bench because him and Rabiot were late to the team meeting before the game. But he came on and scored. This time to see him off after an hour was really, really like, wow, this is crazy. He was not happy at all. You could see on his face, you could see him mumbling like insults towards Luis Enrique as he was walking off under the rain again. And Luis Enrique made sure that when Mbappe came off, he was on the right of his technical area, so he didn't have to shake hands or didn't have to see each other. You know, when sometimes it'd be awkward when you... None of that happened. And then Mbappe went straight, sat a little bit on the bench, then went straight back to the dressing room, apparently to get dry, because obviously he was soaked with the rain. Dembele went with him. Then he posted this photo with no comment on Instagram, seeing him with his armband in his hand, like head down with the rain again pouring. It's a great photo, but I mean, I think he shows the frustration. And Luis Enrique is saying, like, this is boring. Stop asking me why I take him off, because I'm the manager here. I do what I want.
Right.
He was, to be fair, Mbappe was terrible. Probably PSG's worst player in the first hour. So I think Luis Enrique privately is saying, you know, I took my worst player off.
Right.
I don't care if it's Mbappe, Richardson, Horncastle. Mm. It doesn't matter so much. He was the worst player on the pitch. I take him off. As simple as that.
Well, you have to sympathise with that. Also, he had warned us, you know, if it's sunny, he might start. And it was very much raining. So that's probably what led to that. Alvaro?
Yeah, I'm wondering what Paris thinks about Luis Enrique using his Twitch as a tool of communication, because obviously I don't think Paris can control that. And Luis Enrique is really outspoken when it comes to using his social media.
Yeah, that was good on Twitch. I mean, he said, like, you know, he was going to stay at the club, for example, to put an end to all the rumours about maybe going back to Barcelona. Mm. It was really interesting. I think he has a lot of energy and I think he's a very passionate guy. People at the club love him, really. Mm-hmm. Even Kylian and him have a really good relationship. It's just that since Mbappe told the club that he was leaving, he's played in average 62 minutes in the league or something like that, which is clear. It's clearly, I don't know if sanction is the right word, but it's clearly a consequence of him saying, like, listen, I'm leaving. I won't be here at the end of the season. I don't think he comes from higher up in the club.
Right.
It's just Luis Enrique saying, like, you know what? If you're not going to be there, you're not that protected guy anymore. Yes, you are a captain. You are a best player. But if you're not good, I'm going to take you off. If I feel like the team could be better without you from the start or through a match, I'll take you off. But, I think the response from the fans hasn't been bad. I mean, listen, he's lost one game all season in the league. He hasn't lost now since November in all competitions. They're playing well at times. Not always great, but well at times. He's got good ideas, like the Dembele as a false nine, which has worked pretty well in the two games that he's done it. So we'll see. But again, everything will obviously be judged on the Champions League and what happened against Barcelona. Now.
Mm. So Mbappe uses Instagram for his communication. Luis Enrique is very much on the Twitch. I wonder what that says.
He answers.
Are you on OnlyFans, James?
Yeah, OnlyFans. Mine.
No, but Luis Enrique talks about everything. Hmm? Luis Enrique talks about everything. It's really interesting to see him.
Sorry, I mean, what's OnlyFans?
Just Google it and set up an account. People will pay.
People will pay. Okay, yeah, so elsewhere in Ligue 1, Koumbaré with his first game at relegation-threatened Nantes, beating Nice. What a result.
Incredible, yeah. Really good. And they played well. They were well organised. This is what Koumbaré does. This is what he did before. It's more really worrying and alarming for Nice and Farioli, who's under massive pressure now, because there was a point where, okay, give him some time. It's his first season in the league. He's done really, really well. But now he's struggling and so is the team. But he will find a way to turn things around and to fix the problems. And the more they play, the more problems they have. Clearly, that game was maybe the worst game of the season, which should not happen at this stage of the season. So well done, Koumbaré. One of six away wins, by the way, this weekend in Ligue 1, which is pretty incredible.
All right. The biggest of them was Monaco.
Monaco 5-2 at Metz. I mean, Metz are not very good, but it was really, it was a very good performance from a Monaco point of view, who have, they've been hot and cold this season, but when they're on it, attacking-wise, they are really good. Balogun scored again, two goals. He was not happy to be on the bench. You saw that with the lack of celebration. But Adi Hutter was happy to see a reaction like that from someone like Balogun. Really good from a Monaco point of view.
Excellent. Anything else, Jules, from the weekend in Ligue 1?
Just a derby du Nord between Lille and Lens with a big win for Lille, 2-1. They are really good before facing, obviously, Aston Villa next week in the Conference League. And then the following week, the return leg in France. Really good win. De Grova was outstanding. Lens played well and Eli Wahi scored late, who was dropped to the bench. And his manager, by the way, saying, well, sometimes he needs to understand things. I have to give him messages, and dropping him is one of those messages. So I think there's a few things to sort out for our boy Eli Wahi. But overall, very good win for Lille and Paulo Fonseca.
Excellent. Jules, thank you so much. Enjoy your break.
Thank you very
much. And we look forward to having you back next week.
Next week, I'll be with you in the studio.
Okay. Lovely stuff.
Ciao, Jules.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Julian Arons. Next up, Italy.
We're all driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
This weekend, games on Saturday and Monday in Serie A. Easter Sunday kept very much for other pursuits. But Monday night, Inter, top of the table, saw off Empoli 2-0 to maintain their 14-point advantage over Milan. They just need three more wins. Well, if they win their next two, Inter, they could then seal the Scudetto against Milan in the derby. That would be sweet, wouldn't it?
Yeah, which Milan say will not happen. Will stop it, having, what, lost five straight derbies. So I think, that's on the minds of Milan's players and people at Milan. They do not want to be present for a Scudetto party. Although, I mean, for Inter, of course, you know, having lost the league on the final day a couple of years ago and Milan won it at their expense, it would be coming full circle in some respects. But Inter keep on rolling on. Their strikers are not scoring goals, as was the case, you know, when we saw them against Atletico Madrid. Their goals are mainly coming from the likes of Di Marco, Darmian, Bisek, you know, centre-backs and full-backs. But they seem to be able to coast, really, at the moment, because no one's coming for them. I mean, Milan are making a very late charge and are playing some of the funnest football in Europe at the moment. Really chaos ball at some times, but they're just quite exciting to watch. And Leao has been in great form over the spring. And his assist, the back heel, you know, remember back in September, the lightning rod, that was what's he doing in the box against Newcastle? He was probably trying something like this. And when it comes off, it's magnificent.
It was an extraordinary assist, that. This was in Fiorentina-Milan, which turned out to be Milan's fourth straight victory. An emotional fortnight in Florence, of course, with the backdrop of the death of Joe Baroni.
Yeah, Joe, who was the general manager of the club under Rocco Commisso, had been there for 4 years. Life and soul of that club in that time. You know, I mean, He was always there. Like, you know, he would be, I remember going for lunch with him in the restaurant opposite the stadium. You know, if you lived in that neighborhood and you walked around, you would see Joe, and he was approachable. And he was very approachable for his players. You know, be at the training ground, which he was a big part of building, the Viola Park, which is the best training ground. It's probably the best facility of any kind in Italy by a long shot. That was his baby, along with Rocco Commisso's. And yeah, he was at that training ground every day. The coach would always be with him. The players would always be with him. It's one of those almost quite old school people to be a football club. You know, that daily reference point that you would have, someone whose entire job really was to be there as the proxy for the owner, essentially. Mm. But yeah, very, very emotional. I always thought that Joe fought the good fight when it came to what Serie A needs to do to change, you know, standing up, not for the little man in the Serie A assembly meetings, but always being very much aware of the system as it is in Italy and how it needs to change. But really a big shock when he passed away. And I think, you know, the Fiesoli before that game, there was a lovely send-off, lovely choreography as well, which is partly kind of Easter-inspired, sort of doves and everything. But yeah, nice moment, sad story. Fiorentina have got to pick themselves up. They've got a Coppa Italia semi-final
against Atalanta in midweek. Those games, that's become like a weird rivalry, I would say, because in some respects, those teams have been not punching above their weight over the last few years, but Atalanta in particular have thrust themselves into the positions that Fiorentina would usually think of them as for themselves. They've been getting into cup finals, as has Fiorentina. And Gasperini always, when he goes to Florence, he gets booed, he gets whistled, because he used to just regularly call out Chiesa for being the diver. Not that he is, but yeah, he was very unflinching in his criticism of a boy who was Florence's boy, and then obviously ditched them for Juventus, where everything's going great.
So. Mm. Everything's going great at Juventus. So Milan, with that victory, are now 6 points clear of Juve, set really for second place. Juve losing again this weekend. That's one win in their last nine matches. This latest defeat coming away at Lazio in Igor Tudor's first game in charge of the Laziali. And as you mentioned, he's being mentioned as a potential replacement for Allegri. Should, as seems increasingly possible, the old lady decide to make a change. They go again this evening in the cup with Atalanta Fiorentina, as you mentioned, the other semi-final. What was different about Lazio for a start?
Well, the formation, they went to a back three, which is kind of what Tudor does. We saw that with his Hellas Verona team. And he was really bold in his lineup. He played Cataldi and Daichi Kamada, the Japan international, in midfield. And Kamada has been out of the side with Sarri. He was someone who would either play on the wings or as a 10, not in a 2 in midfield. And then he played Mattia Sacchini, Felipe Anderson and Pedro off Tati Castellanos. So again, he's got more wingers, more 10s in the team than Sarri was prepared to do. And they should have been 2 or 3 nil up at halftime. Castellanos missed a couple of really good chances. Felipe Anderson was cutting Juventus to shreds in that first half. And the thing with, ultimately it was a late goal that won it from Marisic. It was a carbon copy of Ivan Provodel, the goalkeeper's goal for Lazio against Atletico Madrid. Stoppage time, last ditch cross into the box, late runner. This time it was Marisic instead of Provodel, and they won it. They deserved to win it. And yeah, now, I mean, you mentioned Tudor, James. Tudor will not be the next Juventus coach because, I mean, he's literally just walked in the door at Lazio. But he was an assistant under Andrea Pirlo at Juventus, even though he'd had previous head coaching experience. He's done really well in every job he's done since, Verona, Marseille as well. And you'd think he would be a fit for a team that, you know, up until Saturday had been playing with a back three in Juventus. I think this was one of the reasons why things went wrong for Juventus. Allegri tried to change it. He played with 4-3-3 in order to have Chiesa in his best position as a winger, but Chiesa didn't have an overlapping fullback behind him, so he was isolated, always got bullied, 2v2. And the winger on the other side is not a winger, he's a fullback, Andrea Cambiaso, which was seen as the kind of lack of bravery, lack of courage on Allegri's part. If you are going to play 4-3-3, be bold, play Chiesa right, play Kostic left, something like that. And so all of a sudden, a lot of pressure gathering around Allegri. And it's amazing to think that, you know, going into early mid-February, they were right in the title race with Inter. So this is a collapse that is astonishing, really.
You mentioned the prospects are dropping out of the Champions League picture. Mm. They were 17 points clear of fifth place back in February. They're now just 7.
Yeah,
they're only 2 points ahead of fourth place Bologna, who went and won again, this time against Salernitana. What a goal from Orsolini.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the two of the three goals in this were beautiful. I mean, Orsolini, I think there have been times, and this goes back prior to the last European Championship, where I think he's had better seasons than Federico Chiesa, but he doesn't have the surname that Chiesa has or the hype that Chiesa has. He's been great under Thiago Motta. He was good for the national team as well in the international break. He set up Barella's goal. I can't remember which game that was, Venezuela or Ecuador, one of them. But he's been, and also Salamaca's goal was great. Doesn't really take a deflection.
Mm.
And he was asked about the wind afterwards. It's like, did the wind carry it in the way? Because it's a weird trajectory.
Mm.
And he was like, no, it was all about the Swaz, the Swazamackers.
Very so, nice, very nice.
So yeah, Bologna, this is the problem that Juve have got. Bologna keep winning. Atlanta have got a game in hand. Roma, unfortunately, having had this great momentum under De Rossi, they didn't come undone, but they were down in Lecce. Lecce had 27 shots against them. And even though things have been good under De Rossi, there have been games where they haven't looked all that, particularly in first half of games against Frosinone, against Fiorentina. And this was the case as well. Lecce should have won that game.
Mm. All right. Well, situation fluid there. As you say, Atalanta with a game in hand, which could narrow that gap uncomfortably for Juve down to fifth, although we'll see what that represents with coefficients and all of that. Just to flag up as well, the 1-1 draw between Cagliari and Verona. What a goal from Bonazzoli in there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Naslin. Vai cross per Bonazzoli con il tacco! Batte sgufete! E Bonazzoli che non giocava dal primo minuto, dal 10 novembre.
Did you see the Matias Soule goal for Argentina's under-23s? This is niche.
Oh, yes.
It was slightly similar to this, the Bonazzoli goal. I'd say Soule, if you've not seen this one, check it out. Just put Soule golazzo into YouTube. And then there was another one in the second division. Como were playing, and there's like a sort of round the corner bicycle kick in that game,
right?
Which is quite magnificent. So, yeah, I'd say there wasn't really a top moment in Serie A, even though we have spoken that. But there's lots of lovely goals, lots of lovely pieces of skill.
Nice.
So yeah, good stuff.
And speaking of Como, James.
Yeah.
You've got a lovely piece out yourself now on theathletic.com about this rising force in the Italian game. Richest club in Italy by some metrics.
By a long way.
Yeah.
If they want to really kind of...
How far can they go, do you think?
Well, they had a really good weekend because they beat Sud Tirol.
Mm.
And
it's almost a local derby.
Yeah, almost. Mm. They're local derbies with Lecco.
Okay. Como, I should say, are in the second division at the moment.
Yeah. Not really coached by Cesc Fabregas because Cesc hasn't got his license yet, but he was briefly coach. He's doing that sort of thing that Roy Hodgson did late in the 90s at Inter, where the Italian Federation were like, we don't like your badges, so you're going to have to nominate someone to be in charge.
And he's been interviewed almost as a coach for the coach's voice, talking about tactics and all that. I don't know if you have seen that, but he's already speaking out as a coach, almost as a coach. Yeah.
But they won. Parma lost. Parma are far and away out in front. Cremonese lost and Venezia lost. So that meant that Como leapfrogged and got into the automatic promotion places. So that's very positive. The other team that's making a late charge is Andrea Pirlo's Sampdoria.
Yes.
Who've won 4 in a row. And, you know, I mean, Tudor's win on Saturday for Lazio, it kind of led people to say, you know, when Juventus last won stuff under Pirlo, when they won the Coppa Italia and the Super Cup, it was because they had Igor Tudor as his assistant. He was basically holding Pirlo's hand and telling him how to do this. But Pirlo, all of a sudden, is sneaking Samp into the playoffs. So be very loaded playoffs because... It'd be, at the moment, Parma and Como would go up, and then you've got Venezia, Cremonese, Catanzaro, who came up last year, Samp.
Palermo in there as well.
Palermo, who lost to Pisa, 4-3. Palermo backed by everyone's favourite multi-club operation, City Football Group.
But Como, who didn't exactly set the world on fire last time they were up in Serie A, pretty much set the stadium on fire, actually. but this time, it's a different operation.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, as you mentioned, they've got these two Indonesian billionaire brothers who are bankrolling it all. But they haven't gone crazy with spending. Yes, they brought in big names as sort of equity partners like Thierry Henry, like Cesc Fabregas, like Dennis Wise, who was sporting director for a time. And they've gone out and bought players who are Serie A proven, like Patrick Cutrone. You know, Cutrone is a player who was fetching... near 20 million from Wolves, played a bit in the Premier League, played for Valencia.
Simone Verdi as well, who is a kind of tried and tested Serie A player. Baselli, who has been in Serie A for a long time, injured at the moment. But they've actually got like a core of like guys who've been there since the fourth and fifth tier. Mm. And Gabrieloni, whose goal I was mentioning earlier, Gabrieloni's one of those guys who was in Serie C with them. And again, there were players in the team at the weekend who've been with them through thick and thin when they didn't have billionaire owners, when they weren't able, they didn't have a training ground, when they were having to basically, you know, rent one AstroTurf pitch 1 week and then, oh, we didn't book it in time, we've lost it, so we're going to have to book another one and that sort of thing. So it's quite an interesting story. And the plans that they've got for the stadium, and I know we always like roll our eyes when Italian clubs talk about redeveloping stadiums, but they're very similar to what Fulham have just released with their Riverside Stadium, the Riverside Stand, you know, with the swimming pool and that sort of thing.
Only you can imagine there's being used a bit more.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's exciting.
So that would be exciting.
With a view out over the lake.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, magnificent.
Very nice. Okay, James. We'll keep our eye on that as the season progresses towards the big finale. But next up, we're off to Spain.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Marcos Llorente, Llorente Coque, Coque Correa, Correa se gira, toca para Saúl, la tiene Saúl, gol, 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 gol del Cholo!
All right, Alvaro, Real Madrid continued their title form with a 2-0 win over Athletic Club de Bilbao at the weekend. We also had 1-0 wins for Barcelona against 10-man Las Palmas, after a pretty extraordinary foul by the Las Palmas keeper. And, ooh, Atletico Madrid moving past Athletic into fourth spot again after they beat Villarreal late on Monday night. Where do you want to start?
We're going to start by Monday because Atletico's win is quite important for them. Saúl scored 3 minutes after coming from the bench. Soothing goal for Saúl and probably his morale and his mentality, because he's a player who has had some ups and downs as well, and we know that mentally he's been quite fragile.
He was the one who posted on social, "I know I'm playing shit," wasn't it?
Yeah, like yeah. He's been always very outspoken about himself and very harsh with himself as well, very exigent. At the end of the day,
he'd be doing some soul searching.
Exactly, a deep one. And his soul searching, you can understand why, because in 2016, 2017, 2018, he was one of the youngest prospects of Spanish football. Luis Enrique, as soon as he became the Spanish national manager, he gave, you know, so much responsibility to Saúl on midfield, because Saúl was the player who was supposed to lead or command that midfield, and his physical strength was going to be pivotal for Spain in Euro 2021, and he didn't even make it in that Euro. Then he had the loan spells at Athletic, at Chelsea, then at Valencia, I believe, and he never rediscovered his best form. He's been playing as a left back, as a midfielder, but he scored a beautiful goal. Basically, he passed the ball into the net, and these 3 points for Atletico are very important, because Atletico de Madrid needed a win away. They haven't won away for a while. They even lost at Cádiz a month ago away from home. So they have been very poor, and only the win against Inter had been the only shining light in Atletico's form in the last couple of months. So yeah, it was not only important for them, but also I think that the game showed that Atletico de Madrid right now is a bit jaded physically. We have spoken about this thing in 2010-2014. They have played many games, and now they will rest until their game against Borussia Dortmund, because next week in La Liga there are no games. It will be a weekend just fully devoted and dedicated to the Spanish Cup final.
Okay.
So the likes of Antoine Griezmann, Alvaro Morata, Memphis, and many more can do with a little bit of rest. So yeah, a good win for Atletico de Madrid and a great win for Real Madrid as well, because Barcelona has been, at least results-wise, very good since they lost to Villarreal 5-3. That night Xavi said that he was leaving, and there has been a positive reaction since then. Barcelona haven't lost a football game since January or early February. I cannot recall it now accurately. And you may have thought, all right, if they have had so many good results, maybe they have cut the deficit with Real Madrid to a point in which there is a title race. Not at all, because Barcelona's good run haven't had a translation in point cutting in relation to Real Madrid, because they have only cut 2 points with Real Madrid in the last 2 months. Real Madrid has been very good. This weekend they didn't have Vinicius. Vinicius was suspended, but Rodrigo took the reins, and he scored 2 goals that Vinicius would have scored, because Rodrigo is very happy playing on the left, and Vinicius plays on the left. And the next season, Mbappé probably will be at Real Madrid, and there will be 3 suited candidates to play on the left. Wow. And Vinicius will be the third one. Rodrigo will be the third one. But whenever Rodrigo is there playing on the left, he proves that he's got the technique, the speed, the quality, and the clarity on the ball to do that. He killed the game against Athletic de Bilbao himself. The game felt a little bit of a formality, in a way, because Real Madrid knew that Athletic Club Bilbao was probably thinking of the cup final,
right?
They don't want to pick injuries and all that. But the player had to step up and, you know, just complete that formality. And it was Rodrigo who did it.
Saturday sees Athletic Club de Bilbao in the final against Mallorca. You confident, Álvaro?
You know, I think that I have to be confident, and Bilbao's fans have to be confident, because Mallorca in the league are fine, but at the end of the day, this is a side that have a target every August, which is trying to avoid relegation, whereas Athletic Club Bilbao is looking very good this season. Offensively, they are strong. They are fun to watch. They are getting the results. They are looking to qualify for the Champions League for the first time in 10 years. They are the favorites, but on the other hand, they have lost 5 Spanish Cup finals in a row. Has to be said that for the first time in many years, Athletic Club Bilbao comes as a favorite for this final.
Right.
Because the last 4 lost were against Barcelona and the other one against Real Sociedad, which was a derby. But this time, the fans are really enthusiastic, really happy. There are many people already in Sevilla with no ticket, with no accommodation. They will sleep in their car right now. Yeah. And Saturday, basically, Sevilla is going to be dyed and painted with the red and white colours of Athletic Club Bilbao.
Okay. Apart from the glory, what do you get for winning the Copa del Rey? Do you get, is it a Champions League place?
No, we get the Europa League Europa spot. League, but I think that's pretty much guaranteed via La Liga. But what we're going to get, if we get it, which is still highly hypothetical, it will be winning the first major trophy since 1984. Because Athletic Club Bilbao has won 2 Super Cups in 2014. They won another one a couple of years ago. But the last cup final is the big last title we had. And by the time in 1984, when we won the cup, we were considered in Spain the king of the cup. That was our 23rd cup title, more than anyone else. But in the last 40 years, Barcelona has caught up and overtaken Athletic Club Bilbao in the cup trophy winning list.
Pep Guardiola not happy about no La Liga this weekend, because Real Madrid
happy.
Just gonna put 9 days off.
9 days off for Real Madrid, for Barcelona, for Atletico. To be honest with you, I don't think that there was needed a weekend off, but the Spanish FA is doing it like this in conjunction with La Liga. But I think that Sunday could have been a day dedicated to La Liga games,
right,
and Saturday to the cup games.
So you only got one game on Saturday, and then
and
lower
it.
Divisions and stuff. Was were the upcoming Champions League quarterfinals a factor in that decision, or is it just to give the Copa del Rey?
No. This is a scheduled way before.
Right.
All this. Yeah, really. But it is very, very good for Real Madrid, Atletico, and Barcelona. I mean, it plays very well for them. Real Madrid, because who knows? Maybe even Eder Militao, who played a few minutes for Real Madrid after pretty much 8 months out. Maybe Eder Militao will get now 9 days to recover fully and to be able to start against Manchester City, because in Barcelona, Frenkie de Jong and Pedri could have some time as well to recover ahead of the big challenge against PSG. And I said what I have to say about Atletico. I mean, they are very tired and they can do with a break.
Although sometimes that extended break before a game means you don't quite have the rhythm when the match goes underway. We shall see.
We'll talk more
about those fixtures in next week's show. To finish off on Spain, meanwhile, one of the big stories of this season has been the battle against racism. We had the Spain-Brazil game, which was spectacular last week, the 3-3 draw, which was a match against racism. But this weekend, more problems.
There were more problems, yeah. There was one in La Liga, top flight, during Getafe-Sevilla. Sevilla won, by the way, with a goal from Sergio Ramos the day of his birthday, 38 years old. Cool. But there were insults to Marcos Acuña, who is Argentinian. He is white, but he was called Monkey. I guess that this insult comes from the very sad fact that some people in Spain consider Latin American-born people inferior to them. I guess that the racism comes from there, but it is a racist insult. And then Quique Sánchez Flores, who comes from a gypsy background, by the way, his aunt Lola Flores was called La Faraona, and it's a very famous Spanish singer. And, you know, Quique was called Gitano, which is gypsy, at Getafe ground. Luckily, in the match report done by the referee, he wrote about all this because someone could spot it. And I believe that the Spanish FA will be very quick sanctioning all this. So I wouldn't be surprised if Getafe stand or part of the stand where the insults came from will be closed for the next games. Mm. And then there was another insult, another racist episode, a very sad one, very upsetting and violent as well, in the Spanish third tier. It happened between Sestao, which is a team from the Basque Country next to Bilbao, 10 kilometers away from Bilbao, and Rayo Majadahonda, a team from Madrid. Rayo Majadahonda's goalkeeper is from Senegal, Sar, Cheikh Sar, is called. And he says that he received many racist chants from the crowd. So at some point, after receiving a goal, he just went to the stands and he wanted to fight or to definitely challenge the person who was insulting him all the time. The referee had to stop the game, and Rayo Majadahonda, after that incident, decided not to return onto the pitch. The referee, in his match report, he didn't write anything about the racist remarks because he says that he didn't hear it. Mm. You know, it's third division, Spanish football, maybe it's more difficult for the cameras to spot it and all that. So it looks like, on the basis of the evidences that the referee has found, maybe Rayo Majadahonda loses the 3 points in this game, and there will be definitely a suspension for the goalkeeper, Cheikh Sar, sadly, because he went onto the stands to just challenge the person who insulted him.
Okay, is there any momentum in Spain for, has this case brought any kind of pressure on the authorities to look at that differently?
I think that they will look at that. There will be a proper search for any footage or evidence about what happened in Las Llanas, Sestao ground, and as soon as something is found, I think that, probably the Spanish authorities and the Spanish FA especially will take note and probably will sanction this. It upsets me almost on a personal level because it happened next to Bilbao, Biscay. Right now, the situation in the Basque Country and in that area in particular is not particularly bad financially. The far right doesn't have any representation over there in the Basque Country, neither in Sestao, no representation in the parliament at all. Mm. There is like a 10-15% of foreign people living in Sestao, so they should be very used to having immigration around them and all that. And I don't understand why on earth having this positive, environment around them, there is no unemployment in there, everything looks very good, there is no this narrative of, oh yeah, these foreign people are coming here to take our jobs, all that. You know, if the situation is favorable, financially we're good and all that, I don't understand why on earth this is happening next to Bilbao, which is supposed to be a very progressive area as well, when it comes to ideology and when it comes to modern ideas, it's an open society. It is very upsetting. Mm. It is very upsetting. And I think that the fact that the Basque Country and Spain didn't have a lot of black people or African people or Asian people living there until the 90s, because we had a dictatorship until the mid-70s, the fact that we didn't have many foreign people living in the country shouldn't be a palliative anymore. I mean, this is not the 90s, this is not the early 2000s. I mean, immigration has been a thing in Spain for many years now, so I don't understand why this is happening, but it is very upsetting. And also, I'm telling you, on a personal level, because, then you have to give any explanations why this happens in the Basque Country, why this happens in Spain, enough. You know, I think the Spanish authorities, really, are doing enough, in a way. La Liga, they're having many campaigns against racism. The Spanish FA, whenever there is a report from the referee saying there has been this thing, the Spanish FA is taking action. Mm. Then some provincial courts, sometimes they are terrible about it. And I remember when Vinicius was insulted outside of Wanda Metropolitano, and there was a doll of Vinicius hung from a bridge. No provincial court took action about it, and they filed that thing. this is upsetting. But generally speaking, I think that we are making an effort as a country just to tackle racism. So when these episodes happen, you know, it's a step backwards. It's a big step backwards.
Indeed so. Well said, Alvaro. Well, that's where we'll sign off for this week on the Totally Football Show's European edition. As mentioned, next week we should all be together as we head into a big midweek of European action. For now, many thanks to Alvaro, to James Horncastle, Julien Laurence from his timber bunker, and Raphael Honigstein. And also, of course, Liam and Charlie in the booth, and you, listener. Thanks for being with us. We'll catch up with you soon. From now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.